Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Scholarly Communication, the podcast about how knowledge gets known. I'm Avi Stamen, co-host of the Scholarly Communication Podcast. When I'm not podcasting, I dedicate my time to my family, riding my bike up in the mountains, and running my company, Academic Language Experts. Academic Language Experts, or ALE for short, is an author services company dedicated to helping scholars elevate their manuscripts prior to publication, as well as reviewing grant proposals to receive competitive research funding. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Alejandra Anzani, editorial director at Academic Studies Press. Alejandra oversees ASP's book acquisitions and works closely with ASP's other acquisitions editors. She acquires books in selected areas of Jewish studies, Turkish and Ottoman studies, Middle Eastern studies, and evolutionary studies. Her interests include jazz and sailing. Alejandra, thank you so much for joining me today. It's really nice to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Brilliant. It sounds really interesting, a really fascinating mix of subject areas that you cover, and I'm sure we'll get into that when talking about the publisher itself. But maybe I could take you back just to start us off, to when you kind of first knew that academic publishing was the industry that was for you, and what was there a particular moment where you realized that this was what you're going to kind of dedicate your professional career to?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And I've always been in love with publishing in general since I can remember, really, as, you know, the thing that made it possible for me to hold in my hands the wonderful content that an author had in their head, essentially. But in particular, academic publishing, I think it was a moment, I did classics as my in my high school. And I was reading this wonderful new edition of the Odyssey, a critical edition with a translation and note apparatus, of course. And I was thinking, you know, for a book that is almost 3,000 years old, the fact that we still need a new edition of it and that so many people work together to, for me to have this wonderful book in my hands, and you know, academic publishing really is what makes it happen. What made that happen?
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. There's something about holding that physical book. You know, even if we're very into ebooks and digitizing, and that's all very important, there is something about the experience of just kind of holding the book in your hands and looking at it and realizing that this was something that you created, really from, you know, almost from scratch, or obviously together with the authors, in collaboration with the authors, with a lot of other helpful partners. But to think about creating something from nothing is quite an amazing, you know,
Really, publishing is the link between that creation and the work of the academic and their readers.
I think one of the things that I, you know, when you hear people from outside the publishing industry kind of asking what publishers do, they think, well, because things are online nowadays, so that means that, you know, but maybe publishing is less necessary. And I think that's, you know, obviously, you know, there are a lot of important steps in the process that go on behind the scenes that people don't necessarily see. Printing is just one of them. So even without print, there's still plenty of work to do.
Yeah. Yes. It takes a lot of people and a lot of time and effort.
So tell me a little bit about your role as the editorial director at the press and kind of, you know, what that means. What are some of your responsibilities and obligations? And how do you balance, you know, your time trying to collect in your areas or trying to acquire in your areas with, you know, supporting your staff who also I'm sure have, you know, there's plenty to do there as well.
Yeah. So that's probably the most difficult part of my role is that I think in many other small publishers and independent publishers, even the directors need to really juggle many different tasks. And in my case, yes, it's managing the acquisition strategy for the whole press and the trade imprints and the journals with, and so dealing with all the other acquisitions editors and more sort of managerial level tasks, but also acquiring in my own lists. So yes, I mean, it's difficult, but it also allows me to stay close to the content creators, really, so the authors, and have a direct relationship with them, which I think, in larger presses, at an executive level, you would lose. So, you know, it's good and bad.
Yeah, for sure. I think that there's something about, you know, when you're managing people, there's a tendency to kind of forget about the difficulties and challenges of their work. But when you're actually do even a small amount of that yourself, it probably keeps you very in tuned with their needs because you're getting the same, you know, pushback from authors or, you know, publishing bottlenecks, you're facing the same things that they are.
Exactly. Yes. It's all a very close knit team. And I think that is a strength really. It makes us work very well together.
Now, I imagine that some of our audience probably is familiar with Academic Studies Press and maybe have even published there themselves, some of our New Books Network audience. But I'm assuming that, you know, there may be some folks who are not yet familiar. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about ASP. You know, what's kind of the mission? What's the purpose behind the work that you're doing? And how would you say maybe you're unique or a bit different from some other publishers, some other commercial publishers out there?
Yeah. So at Academic Studies Press, we focus on Slavic studies and Jewish studies. But as you could see from my list of acquisitions, we have expanded into other subject areas as well. And we're constantly expanding our offer. But we are proud to be focusing on Jewish and Slavic studies in particular. And our the majority of our list are really on those subjects. We are an independent press. And so we don't have any support or control that is external to us, essentially. So that's a good and a bad thing. Of course, we don't have the big endowments of many university presses, for example, but we're able to work independently. And we are a small team of personable people and very interested, genuinely interested in the projects that we get sent, the proposals that we get sent. I don't think that you would get the same response as an author, either by email or on the phone from larger publishers that you get with us. And the fact that we are a small team obviously has upsides and downsides, but the main upsides are that we can work more efficiently than larger teams. We're not as rigidly structured, so we can come to decisions more quickly without all the bureaucracy of bigger publishers. And also that our turnaround time is much quicker, and we can be more nimble and flexible to the needs of our authors. We're also we can be more flexible and make our own decisions about the content that we're going to publish, of course. And while naturally peer review is really it's crucial to the content that we publish. We're also willing to take more of a chance on younger, more adventurous publishers, scholars, with more newer content, perhaps, that many university presses these days don't have the luxury to be able to do. And so even content that is not necessarily attractive for the general audience and doesn't have so much crossover potential is something that we are happy to take on. And we won't try to convince our authors to rewrite their books entirely to suit that kind of writing and appealing to a more general audience.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I appreciate about ASP is that there are also some books that, I would definitely call them academic and they're written by researchers, but they allow for a little bit more flexibility in terms of how rigidly we define what an academic book needs to be. And I think that's really important because there are, anytime you kind of are restricted by, certain, whether it be, a certain level of detail in terms of, literature review or just making it, pass every single test. Well, sometimes that can make it less accessible to a more general audience. And I've seen some really nice work from really serious academics who are doing really, nice things, but written in a way which is a lot more accessible than your typical academic book might be. So I think you didn't mention that explicitly, but I wanted to say that because that's one of the things that I've noticed about what you're doing.
Yeah. I think it's all part of making decisions that work for us and for our authors, instead of necessarily being wedded to a specific type of strategy.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk for a few minutes about, or really get your input on, what should authors really be expecting from their publishers? And I think this is a really big question. I think that it probably differs from publisher to publisher. And I think that a lot of frustration can come from, either the author side or even the publisher side when those expectations are not kind of communicated at the outset. And I think in general, because publishing a book is not something that an author is doing every day, it's, at the most, they're doing it once every couple of years. I think it's really important to kind of understand that role. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about kind of what should authors expect to receive from publishers, or at least, at ASP, and what may be those things that authors should be ready to kind of take care of on their own?
Mm. Yeah. Okay, so I think an important thing that publishers can help authors with is giving them some advice on structuring the book so that it's clear and appealing to readers and is likely to meet peer reviewers' requirements as well. So if any parts of the books are missing or they need to be developed, that's something that can be discussed with your publisher, your acquisitions editor. Of course, if it's early enough in the process, that those changes can still be made. Scholars should expect their publishers to organize a full double-blind peer review if it's an academic publisher. And there's really no getting away from that. And it's detrimental to both the author and the publisher. So it's perhaps surprising, but many authors try to push back on that. And I think ultimately it's not in anybody's interest, including their own. So that should be an expectation that I think all scholars have of their publisher. And this is importantly only something that relates to us, because I know that many of the publishers don't do it, but copy editing is included in what we do. We do it in-house, and we find that this works best for us because often authors don't believe it's necessary to have their book copy edited, but in over 10 years, I haven't never seen a book that didn't need any copy editing at all. So yes, I think that it's a bit of a misconception. It either has to be done professionally elsewhere by a freelancer, but I think ideally it'll be done in-house. And that's the best way to have control of it, getting it right the first time and not waste any resources. And then multiple rounds of proofs are also something that we do, and it's very important to us. So the layout of the book is prepared, and then the authors get to see it and approve it, and many make any changes to that layout. And then again, this is something that we do, but not all publishers do, proofread as well, which technically means checking the proofs rather than checking the language, you know, that's done at copy editing stage. So that's just a term that I think is used differently within the industry and outside of the industry. And proofreading really is checking the proofs themselves, so in PDF format. And then, of course, anything related to printing and distributing and selling the book and making it available on as many channels as possible, through very effective marketing as well, and the bespoke marketing plan for each book. And again, this is not something that all presses do in the same way. And it's a crucial step to being successful in not only in publishing the book, but also getting into the hands of their destined readers. And you know, it makes a big difference to have this step and getting it right. So marketing and distributing effectively. And it's something that, again, perhaps is one of the value added of a good publisher, and that authors should pay attention to when they make their selection.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
So yeah, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about, you know, the different editing stages. I know this definitely interests me as the, you know, in our author services that we provide, you know, language and developmental editing are important parts of our services. And I know that publishers do that final review, whether it's the copy editing or the proofs, but they won't, you know, kind of do and they probably shouldn't do the heavy leg work of, you know, kind of getting the book into shape in the first place. So maybe you could define what the publisher does in the editing, you know, context, and what the author should do independently.
Yeah. So before submitting the book, really the authors should work with a developmental editor if they need to, if they can't do it themselves. But I think it's in general always a good idea. And development editing is really about tracing the steps to put the book together. And it happens as the book is still being written. It can be done at the end. And then content editing is, again, you know, checking that the content is accurate. So doing all that fact checking, which obviously the most academics will do themselves, but also ensuring that, you know, the best possible wording is used each time, that that the book reads smoothly and elegantly, and so on. And that is, again, not something that a publisher would typically do. And it is not what copy editing is. So that's an important difference to understand, that sending a rough draft of a manuscript is not going to result in a beautifully written book, essentially. And the copy editing is a crucial step, but again, doesn't cover what I just discussed. It just ensures that there are no grammatical and syntactical errors in the language, and no typos and misspellings, and so that the language is reasonably smooth and can be understood without problems, and they can make recommendations to go back to a content editor or the developmental editor if needed. I hope I have answered that question. It's a bit complicated.
Yeah, very much so. And I think the main point is that, you know, authors should come to publishers, they, you know, with a manuscript that's fairly well developed. I mean, obviously, I'm sure you're happy to give insight and input along the way, but to come and expect someone from the publisher to kind of do that, you know, serious thinking and developmental work, they'll help you give you ideas, but it's going to be on you, or, you know, to either do it yourself or to find some help along the way. And then the, you know, the publisher will make sure that they're not, you know, that you're not missing out anything that's important. So I think that's a good way of putting it. Now, maybe this is, you know, a good segue to talk about kind of the general publisher-author relationship and how it's developed over the past 10 years. One specific example that I can think of is in terms of like dissemination of the research, right? I think, you know, and how the research gets out into the world, or how the book, even once it's produced, gets out in the world. And I think authors, you know, at a time, you know, just kind of relied on publishers blindly. But now that authors have their own, what we like to call platforms, things have changed somewhat. So talk to me about, you know, both your expectations from your authors, but also your, you know, but also how you support them in that process of getting their own research out.
Yeah. So that's probably something that surprises authors sometimes, how involved they should be in promoting their research and promoting the book that we published together. And in fact, we are developing a more robust author hub, so-called, and it will go live this spring. And it'll be a sort of a portal on our website with the comprehensive guides on how authors can help promote their books, basically. And through initiatives such as creating a social media presence, Facebook and Twitter particularly, or maximizing the potential of their academia.edu profiles, creating an Amazon author page as well, because our books are also available through Amazon. And that's something that only authors can do. Publishers cannot create the author page on their behalf, essentially. But also, even for more adventurous authors, perhaps shooting a quick video to summarize the book and promote it. Participation from the author side is crucial, and all of our best-selling books have had some very active authors behind them, basically. And, you know, marketing teams are, you know, at least I can speak for my marketing team, they're great at what they do, and they're really passionate about it, they love what they do, but they're working across several different titles per year, especially in academic publishing. You know, they can get dozens of titles a year, while an author only has their own book, you know, to promote, so they can dedicate a lot more of their attention to it. And they often don't have the resources to spend on the title as well, in the marketing a single title. And there is also something about the message, well, an author of an academic book being perfectly placed to advertise their book to its intended audience, because its intended audience is typically other academics, and they're obviously directly and closely connected to them. So whether it be through like listservs or social media groups and networks, newsletters, like lectures at their institutions, or even just word of mouth. And authors often think that book announcements have more of an impact when they come from the publisher, but we've seen better responses when, you know, authors provides that messaging directly to their communities and networks, because it's more personal. And again, it's all people, the author as well as the audience, and people that are really closely involved in working on that subject, not just being interested in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And I think that that's, you know, you can look at it as a burden, or you can look at it as a responsibility, right? And I think that, you know, it's important for authors to kind of take this as an opportunity to kind of think about, well, where are they, you know, most active and present? And where are those places that they can, they you know, it doesn't necessarily need to be that you now all of a sudden become a Twitter star. It could be something as simple as, you know, just being active on your listserv and in your industry, and then sharing that you have a new book out.
Yeah, even something as simple as having the title of the book and a few options for ordering it on your email signature, for example. And so it's basically a little bit of advertisement every time you email someone. Yeah, or even like putting it in your bio if you're on Twitter or Instagram. And very importantly, and not something that they always do, is telling their institution's library. So libraries will often pick up at least a few copies, and sometimes in multiple formats, in print and digital. And maybe if the book has wider appeal, even your local public library, you know.
Yeah, interesting. Now, I wanted to ask you about like what other issues you oftentimes see. You know, we discussed the editing. We just discussed, you know, kind of making sure that authors have a, you know, are spreading the book. What are some of the other issues that you would say, you know, kind of if authors are going to be reaching out, that they should be prepare themselves for, that they should be ready with before they come, or even not before they come, but be prepared, you know, to address over the course of trying to publish their book?
Yeah. So before submitting a book, I would say, you know, just being aware of all the different types of editing and what to expect from your publisher, or at least discuss everything in detail. And some of the biggest problems that I see in the manuscript that gets submitted is that they're not really ready to be peer reviewed often, or after peer reviewed. They're not ready to be copy edited, essentially. So before peer review, that would involve making sure that, of course, that the research, that the scholarship is up to scratch, and that this your set, something as simple as a set of references, having a consistent and well put together referencing system and bibliography is something that peer reviewers do pick up on, you know, if it's not done well. And again, many authors think that's something that can be done later, but this distracts the peer reviewers and really takes away from the book as a whole.
Yeah. I think you know, it's especially the references and the formatting are sometimes things that can really be frustrating for authors and not something they want to address or deal with. And I think that, you know, there is an argument to be made to being flexible in terms of not requiring one particular style. But for it to be totally inconsistent within the manuscript, I think is problematic as well. So it's a matter of finding that balance and trying to figure out, you know, how to do that. And some people enjoy doing that and can do it on their own time. And then I think there are others who it's just better for them if they can to, you know, kind of outsource that to, you know, to an author services company and have them take care of it. Cause it's not always something that, you know, it can be dozens of hours. It's not something that, you know, everyone wants to be doing.
And especially if the research has already been done over a number of years without, you know, the referencing system in mind, then it can be difficult and, you know, very time consuming for authors to go back and do it. But that is nevertheless necessary. So, but yeah, if it can be done directly by the author, and there are editors that can do it for them.
Yeah. Now, I want to finish off by discussing open access a little bit. And I was hoping that you could talk about a little bit about open access within the books and manuscripts context, and, you know, kind of whether ASP has some sort of open access, you know, process or option. And if so, kind of tell us a little bit more about how it works and how authors can take advantage of it.
Yeah. So of course, open access is not a new initiative, but in particular in the humanities and social sciences, it's only recently properly taken off. I remember when I started, we were all sure that open access was going to be the only way to do things within months. And that was, you know, over 10 years ago. And I've learned that over the years, especially a few years ago, we spent a lot of time explaining to authors what open access even was, and why it was, and why it was a good idea, and in what ways it was a bad idea, perhaps, and before even starting to think where to go and get funding for it. So in fact, ASP launched this open access program. It's called ASP Open several years ago. And again, it took a while to explain why it would be something desirable for our authors. Even when funding, when we knew the funding could be secured either directly by the author or externally by another institution, it was sometimes, authors were unsure of it and didn't really see the benefits. Well, now things have changed and funding is more widely available, and a lot of authors are aware of what it is and understand the benefits. And COVID definitely had a role to play in there. Many instructors and researchers were stuck at home and often also met with digital content that they wanted to access but was behind a paywall. So to really, the open access issue became much more evident. And ASP was really ahead of the trend when we started compared to other similarly sized and even larger publishers. We are constantly adapting to the demand for open access and how it changes, and by paying attention to who's providing the funding, crucially, and what authors need and want to publish open access, and ensuring that the content is as discoverable as it can be. Because of course, it's not only about releasing and uploading it somewhere and leaving it there for people to cover, but there is direct work that is involved in making it discoverable and advertising it, and getting it advertised really in a similar way to books that are up for sale. Recently expanded the number of repositories that our OA content is included in. And we've also tried to work hard on our book's metadata to clearly indicate when a title is open access and that all digital formats of the book are free of charge, not only the PDF, for example, but the EPUB, and many other publishers don't do this. They'll take the funding for a book to be released open access, but then not only produce the printed version, which is fine to do, is something we also do. And for people that do want the printed version, it's only fair, of course, that should be for sale rather than free of charge. But often books are made available for free only as PDFs, but not as EPUBs, for example. And libraries understandably get frustrated about that when they buy a book and then realize that it's in fact meant to be an open access book, but that the format they need it in is not available. So we work hard to avoid that. And we also provide analytics to our authors on a regular basis. And these are collected in partnership with Knowledge Unlatched Analytics. And I think all authors enjoy seeing the reports, and they can see how, what usage the book has had and geographically where it's being accessed. And if the book is not being being used as much as we had predicted, these analytics also help us troubleshoot, why the low usage, why we're seeing the low usage, for example.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Now, Andre, I have some more questions, and I'd love to chat with you further, but I know that you've got a busy day. So if anyone who's listening today is interested in learning more about, you know, ASP and publishing opportunities, is there a way kind of to learn more either via the website, or is there a way to reach out to you? What would you recommend?
Yes, there's a lot of information on our website, including a page dedicated to authors with all the material that they might need, like a book proposal forms and all the contacts for all the different acquisitions editors. But really, if they write to any of us, we'll be happy to connect them to the appropriate person depending on what their query is, and can take it from there.
Great, fantastic. And if anyone wants to reach out to me, you can do that on LinkedIn, on Twitter. That's at ALE_translation. So Andra, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I'm really happy that we had this opportunity. I know that I learned a lot from just, you know, hearing about your kind of the publisher's perspective, and I'm sure our audience did as well. So thank you so much. And I look forward to continuing these conversations and dialogues over the next few weeks and months.
Thank you very much, Avi. Thanks for the great work you do on this podcast.
Oh, pleasure. All right. Have a great day. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye now.